Only then does my rage begin to sour, turning bitter in my mouth. The place looks like an elementary school, surrounded by barbed wire, which is quite possibly the most depressing thing I've ever seen. I wonder if the smell of crayons lingers in the air alongside teenage sweat and desperation. As we walk through the gate, my mood plummets even further. Everything here is cold and mechanized, almost inhuman. It's hard to believe Jesse lives here, day in and day out, locked up like a dog in a cage. Tears rise to my eyes, but I choke them back down. We pass through a metal detector, and then a female guard checks us for weapons or drugs or whatever else we might try to bring in. We have to remove our shoes. Then she asks me to take my hair down so she can check it for contraband, too. We're waved on by a bored-looking officer in a glass booth. Automated clicks and buzzes shepherd us through the maze-like hallways. Aunt Ina is pale, and when she reaches out for support, her hand is clammy. I feel like a monster for making her bring me here. Finally, an officer ushers us into a large visiting room that looks less menacing, despite the uniformed baton-wielding officers standing at attention by every door. There are tables and chairs, drink and snack vending machines. Teenage boys in blue uniforms sit with their parents and siblings, some laughing, some in heated discussion. A few play cards. There are drink cans and empty wrappers on every table. We find a table shoved up against a wall and sit to wait for Jesse. I concentrate on the institutional gray walls and instructional posters, trying to resist the dread that's swirling around me like fog. "You want to get Jesse something from the vending machines?" Aunt Ina pushes a clear plastic bag full of dollar bills toward me. It's pretty much all we were allowed to bring in. I'm glad Aunt Ina remembered to bring cash for the machines. I can't imagine the cafeteria food here's any good. Jesse will be glad for something different to eat. I go to the machines and get Jesse a root beer and a Snickers bar. My peace offerings. And then I hurry back to Aunt Ina, who is leaning against the wall with her eyes closed. "You all right?" She opens her eyes. "Yes, it's not so bad." But then she closes them again. So I doubt that's true. It took a lot of courage for her to come here with me, to face her fears of the outside world. I hope I've got some of that courage too. I'm going to need it. Aunt Ina's about to speak again when Jesse appears at the table.
"Hey,"
he says, his voice deeper than I remember. The first thing I notice is his black eye, then his busted lip. My eyes fill with tears again, and Jesse thumps down into the empty chair.
"See? This is why I didn't want you to come,"
he says.
"I didn't want you to see all this."
I reach out to touch his face, but he pulls away. "What happened?" I ask, wiping my eyes. Jesse tosses one shoulder.
"Got in a fight?"
By the look of his knuckles, he did his own share of damage. "Over what?" Aunt Ina asks, though her tone says she already knows it's something stupid. Jesse smiles and then winces at the pain in his mouth.
"I told a guy his girlfriend was ugly. He's got her picture taped to the wall by his bed."
"Jesse," I say, "why you always gotta make life so much harder than it needs to be? Mama's worried sick about you."
"Look who's talking. I assume you're here because of the fiddle."
I glance at Aunt Ina nervously, and she excuses herself to go to the bathroom. I push the soda and candy bar toward Jesse, and he goes straight for the Snickers. Once his mouth is stuffed with gooey chocolate, I take my chance. I raised Jim's ghost, I say in a low whisper. No use dancing around the subject. Jesse slaps his palm against the table, making me jump. He swallows down a bite of candy so fast, it must hurt his throat. Jesus, Shady, I told you to leave it alone. After everything I went through to, I wanted to get you out of here. How did you find the fiddle? Did Aunt Ina tell you where it was? No, I figured it out on my own. Why'd you hide it under the oak tree? That's where she said to put it. She wouldn't tell me why. Jesse shifts in his chair and worries the tab on his root beer can. At least I'm not the only one Aunt Ina's keeping secrets from. What did Jim say? Jesse grinds his back teeth, making a muscle in his jaw twitch. With his blue uniform and his beat-up face, he looks scary, angry. No wonder they want to try him as an adult. But his eyes don't look angry. They look like a little boy's, lost and scared. He wouldn't tell me anything. Not really. He kept talking in circles, making metaphors. Jim's not capable of literary language. Jesse rubs his jaw, which boasts only a light dusting of fair hair. Nothing like Cedar's dark stubble. I think he was trying to protect someone. Kenneth, maybe. Jesse starts.
Kenneth? What do you mean?
I know Kenneth was there that morning. He told me. Why didn't you tell the police that? Jesse puts his head in his hands and groans.
Damn it. Just forget about Kenneth, okay?
I lean forward. Frank called me this morning and threatened me, saying I need to leave Kenneth alone. Does that sound innocent to you? Jesse looks up, and his face turns pale as oatmeal. When he speaks, desperation laces his words.
Kenneth doesn't matter. He didn't do anything. Leave him out of it. Leave everybody out of it.
I change tactics. Jim didn't say you killed him, but he said you're the reason he's dead. He said you deserve this. When Jesse doesn't respond, I finally squeak out, "Well, do you?" Jesse brings his eyes up slowly to meet mine.
"I do."
The world tilts and sways.
"Why?"
Jesse looks away, rubbing the back of his neck. He lets out his breath in a sigh of exasperation, or maybe regret, I don't know.
Is this about drugs?
What else could it be? What other thing could Jesse be mixed up in?
It's not about drugs, but that's all I can tell you. Anything else would...
Jesse makes a sound like there's something stuck in his throat. He sniffs a few times, looking down at the table. I realize he's trying not to cry. I put my hand on his forearm, and he looks up at me, eyes rimmed red.
I didn't mean for him to get killed, I swear. It's not what I wanted.
His expression is earnest, sincere.
But you know what happened to him?
Relief makes my voice hoarse. Jesse did something. But he didn't give Jim the blow that took his life. He's not a killer. I've been doubting him all along, but I believe him now. Looking in his eyes, I know for sure Jesse didn't kill Jim. And knowing that changes everything. Jesse nods.
I didn't kill him. But I may as well have.
You know who did this. I say. You're sitting in here while Jim's murderer's out there. Jesse looks down at his hands, fear and shame and exhaustion playing over his features. Then why aren't you fighting this? Why are you letting yourself get sent to prison? I can't keep the impatience from my voice. Jesse puts his face in his hands again, and I can barely make out his next words.
No one would believe me. Why should they with my record? With everything I've done?
I'm going to figure it out, I say. I'm not going to let you stay in here. Jesse looks up, his eyes pleading. He's afraid.
Shady, I've caused enough trouble and pain for one lifetime. I don't want to cause any more. If I go to prison, at least you'll be safe and everything will be all right. And no one else has to suffer. Please.
I start to ask him who he's so afraid of. But then something else Jim said hits me. Jim said, sometimes you get punished for a crime you didn't commit. But you were owed punishment for something else. So it's the same thing.
So,
Jesse says, is that what this is about? You think it's your chance to pay for something else you did? I ask, my face burning. I didn't come here to accuse Jesse, but ever since Jim said I should talk to Jesse about him wanting Daddy to die, I've been hearing Miss Patty's voice in the back of my head, saying they ought to reopen Daddy's case. Saying maybe Jesse killed him. I hate myself for thinking it, but I guess her words climbed into my brain like ticks in a dog's fur, and they've dug their suckers in. What's this really about, Jesse? Because I don't think it's just about Jim. My brother looks like he's struggling between nausea and anger, like some deeply buried thing is trying to burn its way out of his belly. Just tell me, I say. I don't want him to tell me. I finally know he's not Jim's killer. The relief of that certainty, having my faith in him back again. I can't have it snatched out from under me.
You'll never forgive me if I do,
Jesse says. And I can already feel the ground starting to fall away beneath my feet. My stomach twists. It's all too much. I don't want to find out if it's something I could never forgive him for. I don't want to dig up these secrets. I've already lost too much. I want to keep what little I still have. Jesse didn't kill Jim. I should have left it at that. Annie has been gone a long time, I say, pushing away from the table. I'm going to go check on her. Make sure she hasn't passed out somewhere. Finish your candy. Jesse nods, relief spreading across his face. I stride across the room, trying to ignore how the eyes of the inmates follow me. Some of them give me the leer that usually accompanies a catcall, but most of them just look like they envy my freedom to get up and leave. I find Aunt Ina sitting on the bathroom sinks, her head bowed, hands gripping the edge of the counter. You all right? I ask. She looks up. Yeah. You get what you need? I nod. So she hops down, and we go back to our table in the visitor's room. But when we get there, Jesse's gone. 23. It's raining when we make it outside, coming down so hard and fast, it's bouncing back up from the pavement. Aunt Ina and I race to the car, but are soaked by the time we get in, water dripping from our hair and clothes. As I drive back down the highway, I stare straight ahead at the road, chewing the inside of my cheek. The road's half flooded, but my mind is like a barn on fire. All panic and flames. Did he kill Jim? Ina asks quietly, barely loud enough to be heard over the rain. No, I say. My voice firm and certain for the first time in weeks. He didn't. But he knows who it was. He knows what happened. Then why the hell's he sitting in jail? Stupid boy. I think Jesse's trying to protect me and Mama and Honey. He said if he stayed in jail, we'd be safe. That no one else would have to suffer. I don't tell her about the rest of that conversation. In fact, I decide I'm going to let it burn to ashes, to be forgotten and dispersed on the wind. What matters is that Jesse didn't kill Jim, that he's being punished for a crime he didn't commit. Aunt Ina doesn't say anything, so I keep talking. Jesse said that no one would believe him because of his record. I wonder if that means the person who really did kill Jim is someone people trust, or at least someone whose word would be believed. I thought it might be Kenneth, but Jesse was so sure it wasn't him. And honestly, I find it pretty hard to imagine, too. And Ina makes a sound of agreement. We drive in silence for a while, my brain spinning through possibilities. But the pieces won't come together. Won't make a whole. At least, not one that makes sense. Damn it! I yell, slapping the steering wheel. If Jim would have just told me, instead of talking in riddles, this would be so much easier. Aunt Ina lays a hand on my shoulder, her touch calming. Tell me again what Jim's ghost said, she prompts. I sigh. But I walk her through Jim's ghost raising step by step, trying to get every word right. And then he said he'd been putting the knots in his hanging rope a long time. Or maybe he tied his own noose, something like, where else have I heard that before? It sounds so familiar. Is that a thing people say, tying their own hanging rope? Like, an expression lots of people use? A memory hovers just out of my reach. I haven't heard it before, I don't think, Aunt Ina says. There's something here, but I can't grasp it. I think and think until I feel a migraine starting at the back of my skull. Then it hits me. Oh my God! Aunt Ina's head snaps toward me. What is it? Frank. In my mind, I hear his voice rumbling at me as he left the trailer that day. I remember when Jim said that about the noose, it sounded familiar, like I'd heard it before. Frank had said almost the same thing when he came to the house to apologize to Mama. He said that some people were determined to tie their own noose. Frank's drunken words, screamed into the darkness on the night I raised Jim's ghost, come back to me too. It's him. He's the one, that lying, conniving worm. He was talking about Jesse, but I didn't realize there might be any truth to his words. What exactly did Jesse do? And what does it have to do with Frank? That last puzzle piece clicks into place. Frank's insistence that it was Jesse. How strange he acted at the construction site. The voicemail he left me. I'm not saying he hit Jim with the hammer, but he's involved somehow. He has to be. I think I knew it all along, but couldn't quite believe it. I don't know, Shady, Aunt Ina says. It's possible. I take a steadying breath. I want to go see him. I want to find out why he's so sure Jesse did it. why he didn't suspect anyone else. Lots of people had access to that house, and I'm sure plenty of those guys hated Jim. It could have been someone else on their crew. Frank would know that. But he went straight for Jesse without a second thought. He's hiding something, and I want to find out what it is. Aunt Ina pauses before she answers.
I don't think that's a good idea, Shady. You shouldn't be confronting Frank. You're a 16-year-old girl, and he's a grown man. And he's not the saint people around here think he is. I knew him when we were young.
Kenneth believes Frank is Jesus Christ in Levi's. And I've never heard anyone except Jim and Mama say a word against him. But I know he's no saint. I've had two glimpses of his darkness. That night he was drunk at the construction site, and the hateful message he left on my phone. But just how unsaintly is he? What do you know, Aunt Ina? She only sighs in answer. Mama told me about that night Daddy beat him up. I prompt.
She told you that?
Aunt Ina's voice is a mingling of surprise and embarrassment. Only that he made a pass at you and you weren't interested, and Daddy got mad and hit him. She pauses, and I think she won't say anything. But then she murmurs,
Frank Cooper isn't a man who likes to hear the word no.
So he tried to... I can't finish the question. The idea makes me feel sick. Aunt Ina clears her throat, and when she speaks, her voice is shaky.
Yes, but he didn't get very far. Your daddy took care of it. And I never had the guts to report it. The town loves him. I figured they'd never believe me.
From the corner of my eye, I see her pass a hand over her eyes. The way she does when she feels overwhelmed.
I've always been ashamed of that. That I haven't been braver.
The thought of Aunt Ina feeling guilty about something that wasn't her fault makes my heart ache. I put my hand over hers and squeeze. Frank and Jim, light and dark, good and bad. But what if all this time we were wrong about which of them was the good brother and which one the bad? What if Jim was right all along and Frank's the wolf in sheep's clothing Jim always said he was? Jesse and I could never quite believe Mama would marry someone so awful. Maybe she didn't.
Aren't you tired of it, Aunt Ina?
I say.
Tired of what, darling?
Tired of letting the Franks of the world make us scared. I glance at her and see her shudder, wrapping her arms around herself.
What are you going to do?
She asks. There's a roar going through me, made up of rage and fear and hope. I'm close now, close to the truth. I just have to find a way to make Frank talk. Jim knew about Daddy's fiddle. Did Frank?
Shady, you can't play your daddy's fiddle again. Not after what happened.
Did he know? Ina sighs.
Not completely, but I think he guessed.
He called William unnatural, warped, that night of the fight. Then maybe I already have a way to make him talk. That makes up my mind. I'm driving over to see Frank now. Should I take you home first, Aunt Ina? She's quiet a long time.
No. Don't take me home.
I pull into the parking lot of Frank's office, a low-slung brick building with scraggly bushes out front. His truck is there, like I knew it would be. Jim always said Frank's too greedy to take a day off. I figured he was just jealous of his older brother because Frank was more successful, more respected. I don't know what to think anymore. I don't know who Frank really is, but I guess I'm about to find out. Daddy's fiddle's on the back seat, where I stowed it this morning, afraid to even leave it in the house with honey. I turn and stare at it for a moment, considering. Aunt Ina turns too, and her eyes go wide when she sees it.
"Shady,"
she says, her voice low and warning. How many more times can I play it before the Shadow Man kills me? I don't know, but I have to take the risk. I'm too close to Jesse's freedom to let my fear win. I take a deep breath and grab Daddy's fiddle. I put my hand on the door handle. "You can stay out here," I say. But Aunt Ina shakes her head. We run through the pouring rain to the front door. It's not locked, and a bell dings as we enter. The reception desk sits empty. The moment I step into the building, the hair on the back of my neck stands up. Aunt Ina shivers and then puts her arm out in front of me, like she's stopping me from stepping out into traffic.
"You feel that?"
she asks. I nod, fear creeping up my spine. But before I can speak, Frank pops his head out of his office. His beard is longer and thicker than usual, his eyes bloodshot. "Can I help you, ladies?" he says, before realizing who we are. He strides to the front desk, a look of annoyance on his face.
"Shady, what are you doing here? I told you to stop bothering my family."
"We went to see Jesse today," I say, squaring my shoulders, meeting his eyes. I'm not a roach to be squished. A breeze from nowhere drifts across my face, making me shiver. Frank lumbers around the counter and looms over us like a grizzly bear.
"And?"
My knees tremble, but I hold his gaze. "I know Jesse didn't kill Jim. And I suspect you know it too. Why have you been lying?" He takes a step back and licks his lips.
"I don't know what you're talking about. What I do know is that you need to get on home now. Leave this matter to the police and the grown-ups."
He's trying to act commanding, but he's off-center, agitated. And that chilly breeze on my face tells me why. He's being haunted. If Jim's already moved on from haunting the site of his murder to haunting his brother, what does that mean? Nothing good, that's for sure. Daddy always said the only ghosts with power like that had made roots in the world from their fear and rage. Those are the kinds of ghosts you have to worry about. I lay my fiddle on the counter. "Do you remember this?"
"It's a violin,"
he says dismissively. I throw open the clasps and lift the lid. "It was my daddy's. You remember how he used to play it?"
"So?"
Frank says, stepping back again. "Well, I play it now," I say, letting his answering silence deepen for a moment. "Do you want to know what happened when I raised your brother's ghost?" I gaze at him, waiting. "Do you want to know what he said?" Frank tugs at his beard, glancing sharply to his right.
"You ain't never."
I pull the fiddle from the case and raise the bow above the strings. "Should I call him back now? Don't you want to say goodbye? Don't you want a chance to tell him you love him?" I gently touch the bow to the strings, and the fiddle emits a high, shivery note. Frank takes another step away from me. The fading note pulls at me, urging me to call it back. But I have to stay focused. Jim's haunting you, isn't he? I say. You know, ghosts never stop haunting once they get started. They're like a stuck record, playing the same note over and over again. They can't help it. They'll haunt you until you join them. My heart races, and goosebumps prick my entire body, but I keep talking. I feel them here now. I can let you see them if you'd like. I was planning to bluff my way through this, but now I don't need to. Jim is here, and his ties to this world are even stronger than they were the night I called his ghost. I raise the bow again, and Frank strikes, slapping it out of my hand. "You little bitch!" he screams, all of his calm bravado gone. "You little bitch!" I'm so shocked, I don't move for a few seconds. Even after the voicemail he left me and the story Annina just told me, it's still hard to believe this is the person Frank's been hiding all these years. This must be the Frank Aunt Ina knew back when she and Daddy were young. The Frank Jim knew. Ina steps in front of me, cringing away from Frank's raised hand. She's been silent all this time. But now she speaks to Frank.
"Why don't you go to the police? Maybe if you tell them what you know about his murder, Jim will give you some peace."
"I'm not to blame for this,"
Frank says, but not to us. He's looking over our heads, as if out the window, though the draft on my neck tells me what he's actually seeing. Who he's actually seeing. "We didn't say you are, but there's a reason your brother's ghost is in this room. He's been haunting you for weeks, hasn't he?" I ask. I realize now that Frank wasn't just raving that night at the construction site. He was arguing with Jim. Frank snatches a heavy glass bowl full of mints off the receptionist's desk, scattering the candy across the floor. He grips the bowl in one hand, lurching toward me.
"Did your brother tell you I did it? He's a liar, you know. He tells all kinds of lies."
I step back instinctively. "What kind of lies, Frank?"
"Of course I believed him,"
he roars over my head.
"I saw how you looked at Marlene."
"What's your wife got to do with this?" Ina asks.
But Frank's not listening. He's still advancing toward me, the bowl lifted in one meaty fist, his eyes focused on Jim's ghost.
"Shady, go get in the car,"
Ina says, her voice shrill. Slowly, I pick up my bow and put it in the case with the fiddle.
"Don't touch that,"
Frank yells. His eyes are dark and wild and lost.
"It's your creepy, freaky family that cost me my brother. That's why I..."
A strangled sob stops his words. I slam the lid down and snap the clasps.
"That's why you killed him?"
I ask, the truth settling into my chest with a horrible certainty. "That's why he's haunting you." Frank moves toward us again.
"Ah,
you killed him," I interrupt, fear filling my entire being. I'm face to face with the man who bashed Jim's head in with a hammer. My eyes take in the heavy glass bowl in his hands, the horrible strength of his arms. My legs feel numb, but I back toward the door with the fiddle held to my chest. My heart beats hard against the case, and I swear I feel another heart inside the fiddle, matching mine beat for beat. "If you killed him, you'll never be free until you confess, until you're punished. He'll cling to you until you die. That's what ghosts do to their murderers." But now Frank's eyes are locked several inches above my head, his face pleading. Then his features twist with rage.
Get out!
He screams. So loud his vocal cords must burn inside his throat. He draws back his arm and hurls the glass bowl in my direction. Aunt Ina and I throw ourselves to the floor as glass rains down on our heads. He wasn't aiming for us. We aren't the ones he's trying to drive away. But that doesn't mean he won't hurt us. Not in the state he's in. I grab Ina's arm and we scramble from the building. Frank screams, propelling us forward. The rain's still pouring. The gravel parking lot turned to gritty puddles. We splash through them, and I yank open the driver's side door and throw myself in, fumbling to latch my seatbelt with shaking hands. Frank is running toward the car, so I back out before Aunt Ina even has her door closed. We shoot backward from the parking lot and squeal onto the empty road. I don't know if he's coming after us, but I'm not waiting to find out. This is the man who murdered my stepdad, who killed his own brother and then blamed it on mine. I can't take any chances. As I'm speeding away, the car hits a stretch of standing water at the bottom of the hill, and my tires lose traction, making the car skid across the drenched pavement into the other lane. I yank the steering wheel to pull it back, and the car swerves into the correct lane and then keeps swerving. Aunt Ina screams and reaches for the steering wheel, but we plow into the ditch with a roar, heading straight for a stand of trees. The world shatters into glass and blood, and finally into darkness. 24. When I come to, sirens are wailing around me, shrill and insistent. A wave of pain makes me close my eyes again. After a few moments, I remember where I am. In my mama's car, surrounded by glass and twisted metal, wet tree leaves brushing my face. Blood drips down my cheek. With agonizing slowness, I turn my head to the right. Aunt Ina is unconscious. Her face nicked with a dozen tiny cuts. Her head slumped against the passenger side window, which is cracked but not broken. I watch her chest to see if she's breathing. I whisper a relieved prayer when I see it rise and fall. We're alive. I lay my head against the headrest and wait for the sirens to reach us. The rain falls and falls and falls. Frank's nowhere to be seen. I don't know if he was even chasing us. Maybe he was running, too. Somehow, despite all the blood and glass and smashed metal, I walk away with only a fractured rib and a nasty laceration across my forehead, courtesy of a branch that smashed through the window when we hit the trees. I get 8 stitches and some ibuprofen, and the doctors say I can go home. The fiddle is unharmed. I made the EMTs put it on the stretcher with me before I'd let them take me from the wreck. But Aunt Ina has a concussion. It turns out her head is what caused the crack in the passenger side window. The real problem, though, is that she can't stop panicking. She's wild with fear, and they can't sedate her because of the concussion. They gave her something for anxiety, but it's not working. She's stuck in a tortured panic, and the hospital is 1,000 times worse than the grocery store. I've tried holding her hand, talking to her, even singing, but she doesn't even seem to recognize me. She keeps whispering to herself. I can't make out most of what she's saying, but she has mentioned a tea party a few times, which makes no sense to me. I dash to the door of the examination room when her doctor walks by. Dr. Yamamoto, please let me take my aunt home, I beg. She'll feel better once she's out of here. She's afraid of the fluorescent lights and all the space and noise. What she needs is the quiet of her house and the comfort of her ghosts. The doctor gives me a sympathetic smile. I'm sorry,
but I can't release her to you. You're a minor. You'll have to wait a little longer.
Dr. Yamamoto has been really kind to us, even though the ER is so busy. So I just nod and let her go back to her other patients. Mama's car is totaled. But even if I did have a vehicle, would Aunt Ina get into it? I texted Mama but haven't heard anything. What if Frank decides to go after Mama now? Or Honey? What if he... I won't let myself think it. But he's out of his mind. And Jim haunting him isn't helping any. I turn off the lights in the room and sit next to Aunt Ina on the bed. She's lit by the glow of various machines. Her hair long and wild, freed from its pins. Her eyes, when she looks up at me, are like a cornered animal's. When I put my hand on her shoulder, she shudders. But at least she has stopped gasping for air like a fish on a hook. "It's all right," I say. "You're safe. It's okay." I repeat the words over and over again, until they have lost their meaning, until they're just sounds, a shushing lullaby. Aunt Ina stops shaking.
"I want to go home,"
she whispers.
"I know. We'll go soon. I promise." "You were really brave," I add.
She reaches up and touches my bandaged forehead.
"I won't let him hurt you again, Brandy. I swear it."
That's the second time she's called me Brandy. But this doesn't seem like the right moment to ask about it.
"It's shady, Aunt Ina," I say. "And Frank won't hurt me. The police will catch him."
I've already given them my statement about Frank and the crash. I told them Frank threatened me and scared me, and that's why I ran off the road. I told them some of the things he said to us made me think he was involved in my stepdad's murder. Aunt Ina was still unconscious when they came by, and I was too worried about her to say much more. They dutifully wrote down my statement, but they didn't say what they would do about it. They probably thought I was the one with a concussion. My phone vibrates in my pocket. When I pull it out, the screen illuminates Aunt Ina's face, and I can see she's much calmer than before. She's almost herself again.
"Look, Mama's calling,"
I say, trying to keep my voice steady. With a shaking hand, I accept the call.
"Shady?"
comes Mama's tremulous voice.
"Thank God. The hospital was trying to reach me, but I didn't hear my phone. They said you were in a car accident. Are you all right?"
Her words come out in a panicked rush. I can hear the engine of Jim's truck in the background.
"Yeah, I'm okay. Just some stitches. But Aunt Ina has a concussion, and the doctors won't let us go. Are you okay? Is everything... Don't worry, I'll be there soon," Mama says. "I'm on my way. Stay right there."
Her voice is laced with fear. But it's fear for me, not anything to do with Frank.
"All right. Love you. Love you, baby,"
she says before hanging up. I imagine her flooring the truck's gas pedal, desperate to reach me. Poor Mama. How many more calls like this can she handle? But when Mama bursts into the hospital room with Honey on her hip, I put on a brave face for her. I let her hold me close and fuss over me. I promise her I'm all right. I say all the things she needs to hear. And then I pull back from her and meet her eyes. "It was Frank, Mama. Frank killed Jim."
"What?"
she says.
"What are you talking about?"
I tell her about our confrontation. How out of control he seemed, how guilty and lost. Her eyebrows furrow as she listens, like she's trying to find some sense in my tale. When I get to the part where Frank throws a glass bowl, her eyes go wide.
That son of a bitch. I'll kill him, she says, clenching her fists. Threatening my child.
Then, I thought he was chasing us, I say. That's why we wrecked. I thought maybe he was trying to keep us from telling the police what he did.
Shady.
Frank might be an angry drunk, but that doesn't mean he killed Jim, she says once I finish. Did he actually say to you that he killed him? Mama, you can't be serious. It's so obvious that he did it. She shakes her head. He's grieving. People do strange, scary things when they grieve. The day Jim died, at the police station, you told Frank that he had never loved Jim. Sometimes the worst grief comes from not loving people the way we should, she says. Her voice, sure. But Jesse, Mama holds up her hand. We need to get Ina home. We'll talk more in the car. But once we get into Jim's truck, Mama doesn't speak again. And Ina's panic grows as we drive, and she grips my hand hard, singing and muttering to herself. Most of it is incoherent, but I catch phrases here and there.
One day, we'll grow up. Never hurt us again. Never, never, never land. Here, I'll... cup of tea. Shh.
Mama glances at her nervously, but doesn't say anything. The fiddle lies silent in my lap, but it doesn't feel like an instrument at rest. It's longing to be played. I can feel it. Its need the same as the need in my chest. We're like two magnets being drawn together. The shadow man is what stands in our way. But there has to be something I can do. A song I can play or sing or something. I'll find a way around him. If Mama's not going to listen, and Frank's not going to confess, and Jesse's going to keep hiding all his secrets, leaving the rest of us to suffer, the fiddle's the only one on my side. We get Aunt Ina settled into the downstairs guest room, and Mama turns to me. Is there someone we can call to come stay with her? Does she have a friend who would come? We can't leave her here alone. And I don't want to go home. Frank might come looking for us there.
Baby, Frank's not coming after you. He just wanted to scare you.
Why won't you call the police? I burst out. He killed Jim. He did it. I know he did. They won't listen to me because I'm a teenager, but they'll listen to you. You were Jim's wife. You're overexcited from the wreck. You need to calm down, Mama says, her voice firm. I'm not, I yell. Why won't you listen? Shady, you can't prove anything. They'll think you're trying to get Jesse out, and you might even get in trouble for harassing Frank. He has friends on the police force. Gary Jones, for one. Yeah, and he's the one who arrested Jesse. Kenneth told me his stepdad made him lie about where he was the morning Jim died. Kenneth was there at the construction site that morning. His stepdad made him say he wasn't.
I already knew that, she says. Jim told me he was having Kenneth come by there.
Why didn't you say anything? I yell, throwing out my arms. I'm staring her down. My eyes as steely as hers for once. When my phone starts ringing. Answer that goddamned phone. It's bothering my nerves, she says, turning away from me. I could scream. Instead, I hit the green icon to accept Cedar's call.
Shady,
he says, his voice relieved. What's wrong?
Kenneth told me you were in an accident. Are you okay?
How'd he know?
His stepdad responded to the 911 call.
Of course he did, I spit, glaring at Mama's back.
Are you okay?
He says again. I went to see Frank and my mind stutters. Why is Cedar calling me? He's supposed to be pissed off.
What happened?
I'm fine. I'm at Aunt Ina's, I say, my head throbbing. If Kenneth's stepdad responded and Frank is his friend, maybe Mama's right. Maybe there's really nothing I can do. Frank has everybody in this town on his side, including the police. I have to go. Sorry, I say. I hang up before he can try to stop me. I walk back into the guest room, and Mama stands up. I'm going to call Miss Petty and see if she'll come stay with Ina. I want to get you home. No, I say. No. I'm not going anywhere, and I'm not leaving Aunt Ina here with that horrible woman. Frank is out there, and he's dangerous. He might want to kill us like he killed Jim, I say, beginning to shake again. Today has been too much. Too much. How can Frank, the one who gave Jim a job, who was always so sweet to Honey, how can he be the murderer? And if Frank's a murderer, what does that make Jesse? Another innocent victim. Mama's eyes soften. Okay. We'll stay, she says. Is there a teapot around here somewhere? Nina's been going on and on about it. Maybe if she holds it, she'll calm down. I stride to the parlor and grab the chipped and yellowing tea set off the mantel. The cups are so small, I can fit two in one hand. When I settle the teapot in Aunt Ina's lap, her eyes go distant and calm. Honey, you want to play tea party with Aunt Ina? I ask, hoping my baby sister's soothing superpowers will work on Aunt Ina as well as they've always worked on me. I set her on the bed and give her one of the teacups. She holds it in one little hand, and Aunt Ina automatically reaches out to pour her some invisible tea. See? Aunt Ina says. I told you we didn't need any cookies. Mama shudders and then strides from the room. I'll be back in a few minutes. I'm going to get some clothes and things for all of us. When a knock sounds on the front door, I assume Mama must have locked herself out. But instead, it's Cedar standing on the front porch. He steps back in surprise when the door swings open, like a ghost going to come jumping out at him. Hey, I say, squinting at his silhouette against the glare of late afternoon sun.
What's going on?
He asks. But then he catches sight of my bandage and the blood on my clothes. His hands immediately go to my face, his eyes searching the rest of me for more injuries.
Shady.
He whispers in the tenderest voice I've ever heard. And I feel the tears I held off for Mama's sake start to come. So I pull away and tell him to come inside, blinking away my tears and trying to make my lips stop trembling before he sees. I head to the living room, and Cedar follows, shutting the door behind him. Before I can reach the couch, though, he pulls me back toward him by my waist. He cradles my face, studying my forehead. I try to avoid meeting his eyes, try so hard to hold back the tears. But then they are spilling over my cheeks, and there's nothing I can do about it. So finally,
I just let them fall. Let the sobs escape my chest. Cedar doesn't say anything. He pulls me gently against him, his hands soft against the back of my neck and hair. I lay my cheek against his chest and breathe in his smell. Wrap my arms around his waist. Twist my fingers into his shirt. He holds me and lets me weep. Every shudder makes my fractured ribs scream. But all this fear and rage and anxiety needs to leave my body somehow. When I finally pull away to wipe my eyes, he kisses me gently at the corner of my mouth, just once, and then leads me over to the couch. His eyes glimmer strangely, and I realize he's struggling not to cry too. That makes me smile a little, knowing a rodeo boy like Cedar is brought to tears by a girl's crying. He touches my cheek again.
Did Frank hurt you?
He says, his voice husky. Mostly it was the tree we hit. His eyes go even more glimmery, and I'm afraid he's actually going to start crying. I'm fine, I say. Just some stitches and a fractured rib. Cedar touches my side with feather-like fingers.
Is he not all right?
I nod. A concussion and a lot of little cuts all over her face. But she's fine, too.
I don't understand what happened. I thought you were going to see your brother today.
How did you?
Why'd you go see Frank?
We went to confront him after seeing Jesse.
You did what?
Cedar says, leaning back from me.
Why would you do that?
You knew he wasn't in control of himself after we saw him at the construction site. You knew there was something off.
You should have asked me to come. I would have helped you. I would have kept you safe.
I wave away his concern. He did it, Cedar. He killed Jim. It wasn't Jesse, I say. Cedar can't seem to take his eyes off me.
But he didn't get arrested yet.
Mama doesn't think the police will believe us. I guess I don't think they will either. Cedar's eyes widen.
So he's still out there. He could come back and look for you?
You shouldn't be alone in this house.
I'm going to stay here tonight. I won't leave you alone until he gets arrested.
I start to say no, but I'm scared and exhausted. And having a rodeo boy watching over me actually sounds pretty good right now. When I nod, Cedar puts an arm around my waist and pulls me against him. Gentler, now that he knows about my rib. We sit side by side in silence for a long while. Our beaten hearts the only sound. As I sink into the comfort of his touch, I think how strange it is that here I am being comforted by Cedar, the rodeo boy. Even a week ago, I'd have only wanted it to be Sarah sitting next to me. But then I realize the person you choose to love isn't the one who shows up when you ask them to. It's the person who shows up even when you don't. Maybe even when you don't want them to. Sarah would have come if I'd asked. But I didn't have to ask Cedar. I was so scared, I say. And then the words are tumbling out of me. The whole story of what happened at Frank's office, and then the wreck. And Cedar listens quietly, his eyes tender and his mouth set firm, like he's never going to let anyone hurt me again. When I'm done talking,
and all my tears are spent. He holds me to him and rests his head against my hair. We sit like that until Mama comes through the front door.
Who's this?
Mama asks when she pushes through the door with two duffel bags. My boyfriend, Cedar, I say. He's going to help you with those bags. Cedar's head swings around so fast it makes my own neck hurt.
Boyfriend,
he says at the same time Mama does, his expression so hopeful I can't help but smile. I give him a wink. I hope he feels all the way down to his toes. Cedar jumps up and takes the bags from Mama's hands, his face a little red.
Nice to meet you, ma'am,
he says, smiling a little wider than the occasion would seem to warrant. But now he knows. I made my choice. And he won't have to wait around anymore. Honey runs in from the bedroom and gazes up at Cedar, starstruck.
Are you a cowboy?
She asks, a grin starting over her face. Everybody laughs, and Cedar bends down to shake Honey's hand.
I am,
he stage whispers, and she giggles. Cedar, you want to stay for dinner? You're not a vegetarian, are you? Mama asks, giving me an appraising look. After dinner, he gets his mandolin out of his truck and performs Froggy Went A-Courtin' for Honey, complete with all the voices and sound effects. She cackles all the way through the song and gasps when the frog gets eaten by a snake at the end. I smile, watching them together. But my mind's on Frank and Jesse and the fiddle that longs for my touch. Mama agrees to let Cedar stay the night, as long as he sleeps on the couch, and I promise not to leave my old bedroom. I agree, mostly because knowing he's downstairs between the front door and everyone I love is the only reason I'll be able to fall asleep. But when a scream tears through the house, I know 100 Cedars wouldn't be enough to make us safe. 25. I dash into the room where Honey and Mama are sleeping and flip on the lights. Honey sits ramrod straight in bed, the way she did the night of the wasps, her little chest heaving. I check the air and her skin, but there are no stinging insects. Mama's eyes are open and staring, but she's still lying down, as if she can't move. Mama, I say. Mama? I reach out a hand and shake her, and she bolts upright, gulping air like she's just surfaced from underwater. Her eyes dart around the room in panic before settling on me.
What is it? Why are you in here?
Mama says, putting a hand to her chest. Honey was screaming, I say. Mama looks sharply at my sister.
She was dreaming.
Mama's quiet for a long moment.
Shady, will you take her downstairs and give her some juice or something? I'll be down in a minute,
she finally says, her voice distant and strange.
What is it? Were you dreaming too?
The hair at the back of my neck prickles.
Just go downstairs,
she says.
Please.
Honey wraps her arms around my neck and buries her face in my hair. I carry her from the room, but glance back when I reach the doorway. Mama pulls her knees to her chest and wraps her arms around them, rocking herself. A chill shoots through me, but I take Honey downstairs. When I reach the stairwell, Cedar waits at the bottom, gazing up at me in the dark.
Everything all right?
He must be scared too, the way he's gripping the banister. Bad dream, I say, passing by him to get to the kitchen. He stops me and kisses my cheek. And then kisses Honey's, too.
I haven't slept much either,
he admits. Because of the ghosts, or because of Frank?
Both,
he says with a sheepish smile. We go into the kitchen together, and soon Aunt Ina and Mama join us. What did you dream about, honey girl? I ask, my heart racing. Was it wasps again? Honey rubs her eyes and nods.
They hurt a little girl up there.
She points at the ceiling. Mama shivers and then takes Honey in her arms, holding her tight. Is it the same little girl from all my dreams when I lived here? The dead girl in the ceiling? The thought makes me shiver, too. Aunt Ina glances up, her blue eyes wide and frightened.
I told Brandy not to take the cookies for the tea party,
she says, her mind not in this world. She begins to hum the low, mournful song the fiddle was playing when I dived into the lake. Daddy's song. The one that turned him darker than the Twa sisters ever could. My skin tingles. This is why I moved y'all out of here. This house isn't good for a child, Mama says. Or an adult, for that matter, she adds, looking meaningfully at Aunt Ina, who stares at her folded hands on the table while she hums. Mama's face is pale with fear. What is it, Mama? She shakes her head. I'm going to take Honey back to bed. But then we're leaving in the morning. We won't spend another night here. I can't stand it. She carries Honey from the room. Cedar gets up too, and goes back to the couch. Probably trying to stay out of our family business. But I trail after Mama up the stairs, a horrible thought forming into a question in my mouth. Does this house have an attic? It's blocked up, she says. And for good reason. Halfway up the stairs, she stops and stares into space, as if she's listening. When I put a hand on her arm, she flinches. Let's go home tonight. I don't want to stay here anymore. This house isn't fit for the living. I won't leave Aunt Ina alone here, I say. Not like this. And we should stay together. Frank could come. Mama swivels to face me. Don't you see? Frank's the least of our worries right now. Her eyes are pleading. No. It's all connected somehow, I say, the knotted threads of the last few weeks beginning to come unsnarled in my head. Frank, and whoever Brandy is, and Jesse and Daddy, it's all connected somehow. Shady, get your head out of the goddamned past. What's done is done. All we can do is live now. Because we are alive. She sets Honey down gently on the bed. If you care so much about the living, why don't you fight for Jesse? Call the police and tell them to arrest Frank. I'll stay tonight. But tomorrow we're gone. Ina can come stay with us if she wants to. Mama crawls back into bed, pulling the covers over herself. You had the same dream Honey did, didn't you? Who's Brandy, Mama? She rolls over to face the wall. Just go to bed, Shady. Is she the dead girl in the ceiling? I ask. But Mama won't answer.
Shady, Shade, sleep here,
Honey says, pulling at my pajama pants.
Sleep with me. I'm scared.
Shh, honey girl. Don't be scared, I say, sliding into bed beside her. I pull her against my chest, and she snuggles into me. But I'm scared now, too. Honey is breathing steadily after a few moments, and even Mama falls back to sleep. But I lie in bed and stare at the ceiling, listening to the moans and creaks of the old house. It has always felt most haunted at night here. The patter of footsteps across the floorboards, sighs pulling doors closed, unidentifiable smells floating through rooms. As a child, I found it comforting. Signs that our ghosts were nearby, watching over me while I slept. But tonight the ghosts are silent. The only sounds from the house itself. Ancient wood settling and creaking. I'd almost say the ghosts are afraid to move. Afraid to breathe. But what are they afraid of? What's left for a ghost to fear after death? I can feel the secrets in every corner, spun like cobwebs. Are they holding this house together? If I begin to untangle them, will the whole place fall down around our heads? Maybe I should try to find the attic and discover what it's hiding. Because Brandy and a little dead girl in the ceiling, the Shadow Man, Daddy's fiddle, and Honey's dreams. Right now they feel like single threats. But I sense that there's a larger pattern. I thought Daddy's fiddle would solve our problems, but it's only made more trouble. It didn't make Jim tell the truth or get Jesse out of jail. It only brought me more enemies. Frank and the Shadow Man and the Wasps. I'm tired of wondering about everyone's secrets, sick to death of waiting for the pattern to be revealed. I'm going to get the answers I need. I've failed at everything else I've tried, but I won't fail at this. I throw the covers off and creep from the room back into mine. I turn on the light and pull Daddy's fiddle case from beneath the unmade bed. I'll take it out to the woods. I'll walk the paths Daddy walked and play the songs Daddy played. For me. For Jesse. But for all the rest of my family, too. For Aunt Ina. For Mama. For Honey. Just as I start to stand, a floorboard creaks behind me. I whip around. Cedar's eyes widen when he sees me on my knees, the fiddle case clenched tightly in my hands.
No,
he says, shaking his head.
No, I won't let you play it again.
Not after what happened. You could have.
I don't know what would have happened, but it was bad. You weren't in control of yourself.
Your mama's right. You need to leave it be. I try to brush past him. But Cedar's hand closes over my wrist. His eyes are determined.
No. I won't let you do this. Not again.
Let go, I say. But his fingers stay wrapped around my wrist. I need to find out what's going on in this house. Everyone's dreams. The things Aunt Ina keeps saying. I can't do anything about Frank tonight. But I can't find out what this house is hiding. I can find out what's causing so much pain to everyone I love.
There are other ways, he says. We can search the whole house for clues if you want.
His green eyes are wide and pleading and resolute. The light dusting of freckles on his cheeks and nose stands out starkly against his skin, which is uncharacteristically pale. He must be more frightened.